Argument is Maransky versus General Motors, Mr. Gibbs.
Your Honor, may it please the court, my name is David Gibbs and I have the privilege of representing Mr. Maransky. The issue on appeal before this court I believe to be clear and important. Does Title VII allow General Motors to deny an employee benefit based on religion? I would argue before this court that Title VII does not allow GM to discriminate against religious people as opposed to their non-religious counterparts. Following the trends of many...
Is that clear? I mean, what's the non-religious... there are atheist organizations and so on, and secular humanists, all that. So General Motors doesn't allow them to have an affinity group, whatever these are called, right?
Your Honor,
so why aren't they being...
Those are still religious classifications.
And right, that's the point. The point is they're not discriminating against believers. They're simply excluding a whole category of affinities because if you turn yours around, you'd say, well, suppose they had allowed religious affinity groups, but they didn't allow groups based on sex, for example. So would that also be impermissible discrimination? That is, once you allow an affinity group for any protected class, does that mean every other protected class, race, ethnicity, national origin, disability, all those people have to be allowed to form affinity group also?
No,
is that
Your Honor,
position?
I think no, sir. You need to look at the different categories. Everyone has a race. Everyone has a gender. Now, I think more appropriately, not everyone has a religion. Not everyone has a disability. And so I think you have to look at the nature of the classification. If General Motors said, we are going
Wait,
to allow...
Wait, you lost me. I don't know. Everyone has a race, but people have different races. Well, everyone has a set of beliefs. People have different beliefs.
But there are people that would be non-religious. And I think you have to look at the main identifying characteristic. No one can stand before this court and say, I am without a race. I am without a gender. That's nonsensical. People can stand before this court and say, I am without a disability or I am without a religion. And what General Motors has decided in this case is that they are going to confer a benefit on their non-religious constituency that is not available to those who view their main identifying characteristic as religious.
But I don't understand. How do the non-religious can't form an affinity group?
If your main identifying characteristic is something that is non-religious, if you say, I'm a homosexual, I'm Chinese, I'm something non-religious, GM says you may form an affinity group. If they say, what is your main identifying characteristic?
But people who are most people not religious, I suppose, are just indifferent to religion. But there are a lot of people who are hostile to religion. You know, they're secular. They think religion is too prominent in American public life and so on. If they wanted to form an affinity group, that would be forbidden. So why aren't they, the non-believers, being treated the same as the believers?
The people that would be hostile to religion, if that was the purpose of their group, would also not be allowed to form.
Right.
The people that are indifferent to religion...
They couldn't form either, right? They couldn't say, look, what if they said, look, there are a lot of religious people in General Motors, and we're tired of listening to them talk about religion. We want to have our non-religious affinity group where we're not going to be bothered by people talking about religion. Well, they can't do that either.
Well, if they base it on something non-religious, General Motors would allow them to do it.
So, but these people may not be homosexuals, black, so on and so forth. They may not want to. Their only affinity may be that they're not interested in religion. Right? And they can't...
General Motors would not allow them to form that group because, again, it would have a religious component. I think the problem in this case, Your Honor, is that General Motors has opened the door with a discretionary benefit that they are giving to all employees under the Title VII class. They're giving it to employees not under Title VII, including sexual orientation, including disability, and they're taking religion off the table. And I believe Title VII clearly...
Could they take sex off the table and say, we're going to allow these various affinity groups, including religious ones, but we're not going to have gender ones. You know, we think it'll cause tensions and so on.
They could take, I believe, characteristics that are...
Your answer is they can take
They can take
off.
Race,
Everything
they can take gender.
Except religion and disability, is that what you're saying?
Well, disability is not protected under Title VII, and for purposes of this argument, would be viewed under the parallel American with Disabilities Act. But, Your Honor, because you are then conferring a benefit on people whose main identifying characteristic is non-religious, if they say, I'm Chinese, I'm gay, I'm disabled, you can have a group. If you say, I'm Catholic, I'm Buddhist, I'm Baptist, you cannot have a group. And I believe GM is then conferring a very strong message, a very strong policy, that basically religious people are forced to not identify in this discretionary benefit as this is their main characteristic. And I believe Title VII intended to take religion off the table. In this case, Mr. Maransky has agreed to obey all the rules and all the regulations. The sole reason he's being denied this benefit is because of the religious nature of the group he wishes to form.
But you could, of course, make the same argument if they didn't allow sex-based groups. You'd say the sole reason that these women, say, are not permitted to form an affinity group is their sex. Because if they wanted to do it on the basis of religion, race, etc., they could.
But if they take sex off the table, and that's where you have to look within the category, men aren't getting any benefit if the women aren't allowed to form, as long as men aren't allowed to form. So there is no disadvantage.
Well, similarly, atheists aren't getting a benefit because they're not allowed to form their own affinity network.
That's the atheists are a religion. The non-religious constituency, the nothings, the people who don't believe in religion, are getting a huge benefit.
No, the nothings can't form an affinity group based on their nothingness.
They can form an affinity group based on anything non-religious.
No, but suppose they're agnostics, right? So they neither believe nor disbelieve. They're in a state of doubt. They're not allowed to form an agnostic group.
No, sir. They're not allowed to form as long as
there's... They can form a racial group, a religious group, and so on, but so
no,
can
it cannot form a religious
believers.
Group.
No, I mean, they can form a racial group or a sex group and so on. How is the agnostic situation any different from that of the atheist or the religious person, and why doesn't that cover the entire waterfront?
Because you have the main identifying characteristic of the individual. When the person steps forward and says, my main identifying characteristic, how people at GM see me, is I'm a Christian, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Muslim.
Or I'm an agnostic.
And that would be your main identifying characteristic, and I would argue that they should be allowed to form Title VII.
But you see, the problem, the symmetry problem, is that similarly, I might be a woman, and I say the most important thing about me, or thing I'm most interested in, you know, I'm concerned about discrimination, so gender, that's my interest. So if you say I can form an affinity group on the basis of religion, disability, ethnicity, national origin, race, so on, that's not good enough because my identity is gender-based. How is that any different from a religious person who says, I have a race, I have a sex, and so on, but religion is what's important to me.
The clear language of Title VII takes religion off the table. For example, Your Honor, could GM hand out an application to every prospective employee? Are you religious? If they answer yes, can GM deny employment? Under the new rule handed down by the district court, that could happen. Could GM say we're going to...
Wait, you've lost me completely. I'm lost.
Based on whether you self-identify, if you say my number one identifying characteristic is I'm religious, under the rule handed down by the district court, GM could, as long as they treat all religions equally. We don't hire Baptists, Buddhists, Catholics, we don't hire any religious people.
Wait a second. If you don't hire religious people, agnostics, or atheists, you don't hire anybody. Right?
This is where I believe the court has to understand.
It's like saying I don't hire men or women.
Well, what you are advocating then is that every person...
I'm asking you a question.
I believe there are people with no religious affiliation, no religious identity, the non-religious.
Right.
I believe giving the non-religious an employee benefit over the religious...
What is their benefit? They can't form a non-religious affinity group.
But they can form a group on any non-religious element
that
matters to...
So can the religious people, right? They can form it on any...
Not on their faith. And if that's
what... But if the agnostics can't form an agnostic group, but can form racial, ethnic, and sex and so on, why is their situation any different from that of the religious believers?
Because Title VII takes religion off the table.
Wow.
And GM, on its face, has a clear discriminatory policy that says a benefit, affinity group formation, will be denied based on religion. And I believe as a matter of law, the decision of the district court is incorrect, and I would reserve the rest of my time.
Your time has expired, but we'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gibbs. Mr. Fields?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Barry Fields, and I represent General Motors in this appeal. The issue on appeal here is really whether or not GM's refusal to recognize Mr. Moransky's GM Christian employee network is discrimination against Mr. Moransky's Christian faith. And as the district court found, we believe that it is not discrimination on the basis of Mr. Moransky's Christian faith. As this court knows, based on the record, this General Motors policy, the affinity group policy, treats all religions the same. You cannot form a Christian group, you can't form a Buddhist group, you can't form an agnostic group, you can't form a group that says we're indifferent to religion. General Motors has made a decision that it is taking religion off the table, as it is taking off the table for formation of affinity group, politics, activities such as golf, golfing or tennis playing, etc. And the bottom line is the GM policy does not treat any faith less favorably or more favorably than Christianity.
You say politics is off also.
That's correct, Your Honor. There is, in the guidelines which are attached in the appendix, it states that one of the
can
topics...
Can they form cultural groups, you know, book groups or something?
Typically, the way the guidelines are phrased is it's something regarding a social identity, and it was the outgrowth of diversity initiatives. But there is, for example, a veterans affinity group as well. With respect to the issue of excluding religious people, I think the record is very clear. There is no exclusion of religious people from the affinity group program. If any person of faith or without faith wants to achieve this or obtain the discretionary benefits of the affinity group program, all they have to do is join up or create an acceptable affinity group program. There is, for example, no requirement that members of the African American affinity group program be African American. There's no requirement that the veterans affinity group program only include veterans. One of the express requirements of the affinity group program is that it be open to any full-time salaried employee of General Motors that shares the goals of the group. So it is an open program to the extent that any employee wants to receive any of the discretionary benefits that may be obtained as part of the program. they are free to join any of the affinity groups.
Mr. Gibbs characterized the GM affinity group policy as essentially an invitation for the formation of these groups based upon individual employees' main identifying criteria or main identifying element or something about themselves that they most closely identify with. And I didn't read the policy quite in that way. What actually is the criteria for formation of these policies or these groups?
According to the guidelines, one of the things that General Motors was trying to do was to allow employees to assist management in achieving business goals. And one of the things that we know is that diversity is very important in society, so this was an outgrowth of the diversity initiatives. There is guidance in the guidelines that suggests that, for example, people of Appalachian background could, if they so desired, form a group. It really is trying to evaluate diversity, and if you can identify some diverse characteristic that would be consistent with achieving General Motors business goals, then there's a possibility that you could obtain recognition as an affinity group.
But the members of these affinity groups and those who form them don't have to declare that X is my main identifying factor or criteria, and therefore I want to form this group.
That is correct,
or be a
Your
member
Honor.
Of this group.
That is correct, Your Honor. And indeed, one can imagine a hypothetical where an employee might identify a number of different characteristics and might qualify to participate in several different affinity groups. So there's no requirement there would be some single identifier and that be the basis for the formation of an affinity group. The second point that I would might like to make is that the issue here, as Mr. Gibbs conceded, is that we're talking about a discretionary benefit. So even if we put aside the fact that there is no disparate treatment of Christians versus persons of other faith, in order to establish a violation of Title VII, one has to be able to demonstrate that, in fact, there is an adverse employment action. There are a number of cases that have been decided by this court as well as courts all over the country that that is a fundamental requirement of Title VII. One of the things that this court's precedent has established is there are situations that will constitute an adverse employment action, such as the loss of a job, such as the failure to be promoted, such as loss of significant benefits. But the court has also carved out discretionary benefits and discretionary perks and bonuses. And the case law is very clear that if what you're talking about, if what you're complaining about is the inability to obtain a benefit that is discretionary, then that is not an adverse employment action and does not satisfy Title VII. Again, Mr. Gibbs has conceded that what he is focused on is the provision of discretionary benefits. Under the guidelines, there's no guarantee that you will be able to have an affinity group. Under the guidelines, there's no guarantee that you will receive funding for the affinity group. There's no guarantee that you will be able to network with General Motors. All of the benefits associated with the affinity group program are discretionary and thus cannot constitute, the denial of these benefits cannot constitute an adverse employment action. And so unless Your Honors have any questions for me, I would just simply say that I believe that the district court correctly decided this case and dismissed Mr. Maransky's complaint with prejudice because he has failed to satisfy a claim or state a claim under Title VII.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fields. Mr. Gibbs, I said we'll give you a minute, although your time expired.
Thank you, Your Honor. GM says they value diversity, but they do not, under this case, value religion. I believe discretionary benefits.
What about the politics? Do you think the logic of your argument requires that they permit political affinity groups as well?
No, Your Honor, because Title VII doesn't protect political groups. It clearly
protects. But the Constitution certainly forbids.
But we don't have state action here. We have to look at Title VII. Now, I do think interesting by analogy.
Well, as a matter of. Okay, so that's a good point. But
we could
as a matter of policy, do you think it's right for them to permit, would be right for General Motors to permit religious affinity groups but not political?
No, I think it's unwise. If they value diversity, get everybody
they
in.
Should,
the whole point, I mean, it's an, I believe, an illegal discrimination against religion.
very quickly, I'd encourage the court to think about the analogy to disability. I mean, if GM says we discriminate against all disabled people, that's insanity. Number two, you could look by analogy to the First Amendment cases. For the government to discriminate against religious in favor of non-religious is never allowed under the First Amendment. And the clear legislative history of Title VII, every time there's been an exception, it's had to be spelled out. And, Your Honor, I believe Mr. Maransky is entitled to be treated fairly based on his religion under Title VII.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Fields and Mr. Gibbs.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Next case.